From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
And welcome to AA for Writers. I'm Michael R. Menengay.
You're not supposed to say your last name. Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a writer.
There you go. There you go. That works for me, too.
Yes, all across the country, people are going, hi, Michael. Yes,
hi, Michael. Yeah,
right. I'm Michael Stackpole, so we'll just blow that anonymity thing there. Just that's.
No, but I am, actually. It's pretty amazing. I said that I was going to do this, and boy, it's been hell trying to get time to sit down to do it, but I've actually done the impossible.
Yay.
I have written the first new words to that book in the first time in 12 years.
Don't you have an applause sound effect or something?
I should.
All right, we'll drop it in and post.
No, I actually laid out an entire new opening, and I kind of ran back home to mama a little bit in the book and pulled some of the elements out because I did have a really nice start to the way I like that.
Sure, sure.
But I'm looking at this more. Here's the way I think I'm going to do this. I am dissecting the book. I've figured it out that the reality is this is two books.
Right.
I mean, the more I looked at it, the more I dove into it, it's like, okay, I basically just squashed two books into one. So I can, now it's going to be pulling that apart and turning that into here's the first story and then here's the second story, and the second story is probably going to end up being a new book, which means that I've got a lot of new content, I've got a lot of new explanation, a lot of new scenes, a lot of new stuff that's going to have to go in the first one in order to stretch that story out. Well, and I don't want to say stretch. It's just basically filling in where it was pretty thin before.
We'll actually be able to talk about that in probably the second segment of what we got here, because I had jotted down notes exactly to I've got notes here for the things you can look at that help you determine what scenes you're going to need that make that work.
That sounds
fantastic. And it's not stretching your story. What you're doing is you're framing it out. It's like framing out a house.
Let's go ahead and table that for back part of the show So you have some news. Let's go ahead and start with that. We'll get the news out of the way. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and finish that.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead with the news.
That's okay. Sorry. Yeah, I've got a big cup of coffee here, and the caffeine hasn't all kicked in
there
yet.
There you go.
So, yeah. Hello.
Wait,
hi. Did we say what our name is? Yeah. That's good. Okay. So today, we're recording this on the first day of February. Barnes & Noble announced, or maybe they announced yesterday, they released a press release saying that they have decided corporately that they will not stock in any of their 700 or so stores in the country. They will not stock any books that are published by Amazon.
Wow, that's huge.
If you want to buy a physical Amazon book, you can order it from them over the web.
Oh, okay. So they're not completely putting a moratorium on it.
Well, their spokesperson did say that they've never had much demand for Amazon-published books.
Of course. Yeah. We've never really had much demand for those books, but if you really want them.
That's right, yeah. And they had maintained, when Amazon said that they were going to be cutting some exclusive deals, and we talked about this before, that they would not support things if the books were not available in the EPUB format.
Right.
So if they're not available for you to read on the Nook, they're not going to support that particular format.
Sure, sure.
Now, there's a lot of commentators that are looking at this and going, oh, no, this Amazon and Barnes & Noble are having a spat. Mm-hmm. And a lot of writers are looking at it in terms of, you know, mom and dad are fighting, which, you know, who's going to get the kids.
Nice analogy, actually.
Well, yeah, but I've got a slightly different take on it.
Okay.
And this is born out of, again, a discussion you and I had previously when this was first announced that Amazon was doing this. And that is, Amazon is, in doing exclusives, is obviously trying to slice Barnes & Noble out of the market.
Yeah, well, that's competition in all the way. In all of them, we're seeing that.
Right.
They're trying to carve their pie, piece of the pie out.
And Barnes & Noble is not fighting with fire with fire. What Barnes & Noble is doing is they're fighting fire by putting out a lot of air fresheners so you can't smell the smoke. Okay? It doesn't mean the fire's out. I mean, Barnes & Noble's way to fight back, if they're going to fight fire with fire, mm-hmm. is that they would turn around and they would go ahead and they would set up exclusive deals on their own.
Okay.
Okay, that would make perfect sense. Then they would have something that they could barter with Amazon so that they can work out a deal so everybody can be doing each other's work back and mm-hmm. forth. Because it's going to benefit the both of them to raise their things.
Right, right. I mean, it's never been a good idea in business to completely turn yourself into an island. You know, you have to have that support out there because there's so much good synergy that happens when you start working with others.
Right.
So,
and the other thing which people aren't looking at in this, and this is where Barnes & Noble really should be feeling the heat. 2 weeks ago, Apple came out with their iBooks author software, which was designed for creating textbooks. And they cut a deal with the three largest textbook manufacturers who control 90% of the textbook market to make their books available for use on iPads in classrooms.
Yeah.
What is the other half of Barnes & Noble's business? What was Barnes & Noble's business before Barnes & Noble started selling retail books?
Textbooks.
Who owns the biggest college bookstores in the country?
Barnes & Noble, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And so this shot by Apple, because what Apple said is any textbook that's available on our device is going to be selling for $14.99 or less.
Right.
As opposed to $75 or more. Who does that go straight at?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That was a nasty little slash across the throat there.
Interesting dovetail to this that you brought that up. We actually didn't coordinate beforehand, but I just read an article. It wasn't 2 days ago, talking about the effectiveness of textbooks on the iPad.
Right.
And it is phenomenal. They are seeing anywhere from 10 to 20% increase in retention of knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's easier for the students to learn, and they're getting better test results. They're getting better results across the board on this device. Right. And Lori and I were talking about this because Lori is a teacher. If you don't know, if I've been following the other parts of this show, which is
Lori is Mike's wife.
Exactly. We were talking about this and she's going, well, yeah, this makes perfect sense because our generation coming up is incredibly tied to technology. They're born with an iPhone in their hands or a smartphone in their hands. I mean, the kids now don't want the cool race car. They want a phone.
Yeah,
that's the first thing they want is a phone. They don't care about anything else, and it needs to be a smartphone so that they can do all the other cool stuff and text their friends and do the Facebook thing back and forth. So they're already wired to use this technology.
And when you say wired, this is really, really important. Starting in the 1980s, there were studies in a new science called neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Before the 1980s, it used to be believed that when your brain was formed, when it stopped growing, you had all the neurons you were ever going to have and you would never have any new neurons.
That's not correct.
Exactly. In the 1980s, they did studies that proved that even if you were 85 or 90 years old, you could make new neurons. And the key thing was that to make new neurons, you have to be learning something new in a stress-free environment.
Right.
If you're being compelled to learn something, you won't develop the neurons. So these kids literally have their brains wired for compatibility with technology.
Absolutely. And that's why they're excelling and that's why they're exceeding. And here's the thing that we're going to start seeing as this starts moving forward with this big push on education in this country and the stronger emphasis on actually performing. I think we're going to see technology move into the classroom at a rate that we've never seen before. And it's going to become the teachers that are going to be running to catch up because they're the ones that are going to have to relearn how to teach on technology.
But the cool things, and I did a couple of blog posts about it, because there's been a big fight about the end user licensing agreement that mm-hmm. Apple's got, and that'll be decided in the courts. So for the moment, I mean, there are people that think it's innocuous. There are people that think it's the next closest thing to indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm.
Let's table that discussion for a moment.
Absolutely. Let's get it out of there, because we're talking about the actual hard facts of what the technology brings.
What the technology is going to allow people to do, which is threefold things. One, it's going to allow textbooks to get in and be updated a lot faster. Instead of spending $75 for a history textbook and have to use it for 5 years before you can buy another one,
mm-hmm.
now every single year the book can be updated.
Right.
And so that's fairly critical in across the board as far as curriculum goes. But the second thing, which is really important, is with those tools that Apple provided for free,
mm-hmm.
teachers and homeschoolers, emphasis on homeschoolers, can create lesson plans all by themselves.
Right.
Trade them back and forth with each other.
Exactly.
And one of the first things that I sat down and did just to play with this software is I took one of my short stories and I mocked up the template for an educational version of that story, where you have the text of the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's chapter one. Chapter two, you have some review questions and what would be essentially essay questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chapter three, you have the text of the story again with annotations,
mm-hmm.
where the author is talking about, I did this to get this effect and that sort of thing. And then chapter four, a little bit more about the background of the story and the context in which it was written. And chapter five,
on and on. Sure.
Right. Which is also good for book discussion groups.
Mm-hmm.
And as authors, having people have to buy our books for a book discussion group and enabling book discussion groups, or enabling English teachers, or enabling homeschoolers, so that they're going to use our work as a teaching tool.
Exactly.
Because of that end user license agreement, so what if I give this away for free?
Right.
I don't care, because what I have is an authority figure saying to 30 students,
mm-hmm.
this is good enough for me to teach you from.
Right.
That kid, I've got that kid forever.
Exactly.
And so this is a promotional thing that we're looking at. We're kind of far down the field from what Barnes & Noble said.
But.
But the point is that this is how that technology is coming in, mm-hmm. and is integrated in the lives of the people who are our market.
Exactly. And this is the thing that we're going to see coming. I don't know. I mean, I knew the ebook thing was going to come in. We've been talking about that forever. But I mean, we said the textbook was going to be important, and we got a lot of rebuff on that. But
right.
Once the technology is tied to the textbooks, and the textbooks and the technology are basically brought to the classroom, I can't see that we're too far away from a whole restructuring of the way the education system works, period. So right. I know I wish Lori was in on this discussion. She could speak to it a lot more. But yeah, it's going to be amazing.
If nothing else, it allows kids to go at their own pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that is critical for a lot of kids in how they learn.
Well, you could have an entire class. You could have 30 kids in a class, and they could all be learning at their own rate.
Yep.
Because it's not a classroom thing where, we got somebody falling behind. Oh, we got somebody learn. Right. No, it's not that. You have your individual. Everybody has their own plan, and they're on their own plan.
And unless anybody who's listening, any of our authors who are listening, think that we're now, discussing education. Remember this thing. Remember, go back to that neuroplasticity. Doing something not under stress.
Right.
If you are enjoying reading, as kids have reading the Harry Potter books and all that YA literature that was pitched at them, if you learn that reading can be fun, if you're rewarded with reading, this becomes one of your go-to entertainment choices.
Absolutely. And all of a sudden, we've just increased our market tenfold, because now we are educating to make this entertainment again.
Exactly. And since they've got the phones, and again, we're going over territory, we'll go to a break and we'll actually do something constructive.
Yeah.
But because they've got the devices, and those devices are empty boxes, we give them the entertainment alternative to fill those boxes.
Absolutely. Good place to stop right there, and I can clear this frog out of my throat, and we'll be back right after this.
Dragon Moon Press, bringing you some of the most exciting new authors in sci-fi and fantasy. Their titles open new worlds and bring unforgettable characters to readers just like you. Bring the magic and wonder of dragons to your child with Dragon's Fire, Wizard's Flame by Michael R. Manningay. Write your own story with a complete guide to writing fantasy. Books by Dragon Moon Press, sci-fi, fantasy, and beyond. Order these titles from your local retailer or visit the website at dragonmoonpress.com.
Yes, you did record that a very long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
But I like pimping Dragon Moon Press. I mean, they're my publisher, but I really, really like what they're doing over there. Gwen's doing an excellent job. Yeah. She's actually got a Facebook page now.
Good, good.
So,
good.
Yeah, you can find them on Facebook, and I'm sure she'll be happy I gave her a whole bunch of free advertising.
Well, there you go. And I was just, this is how vain I am. I'm listening to that going, damn, that's a pretty good voice. Oh, wait, it's mine.
Okay,
it's only good because you were on the board for crying out loud.
That's it. All righty. So on into diving into deconstructing this book of mine.
Boy, you were saying that you're figuring out the different, you're separating the different pieces of the story, and you're figuring out now the gaps you've got that you've got to bridge over, that you got to frame
and filling or fleshing out, I should say, is a better term, because it's really as I go through this, I found that there's a lot of spots that I skipped through quickly because I needed to not have this to be a 500,000 page book.
Well, and the story wasn't focused there. Look, one of the biggest problems that I see with just across the board when I do workshop stuff or you know, I'm talking to students, is that a lot of times the stories were told too fast.
Right.
That they're way too compacted. And if you find yourself in that situation, very often you can look, you know how in English class they teach us that every paragraph should have a subject sentence? You know, sentence which tells you what the paragraph is about. A lot of times when you're telling a story too fast or when you want to expand an area in a story, pick a paragraph and break it down into the individual sentences and make each one of those sentences the subject line of a paragraph.
Oh, wow.
So you take each one of those sentences and then you add two or three more sentences to it to break it out. And this just allows you to slow things down and pay more attention to detail. For example, if you had a paragraph in a book that says they rode all night without incident and arrived at the tavern at dawn, after waking up the proprietor, they had breakfast, they got a room, they slept, and you know, at evening they took off again.
Right.
Okay. That's a perfectly good little paragraph that eats up, you know, no time or whatever. But in a book that you're expanding, suddenly every one of those sentences broken out can become its own paragraph.
Right.
Or even its own scene.
Right.
You know, where they're riding at night, you can have a dialogue, they see something, or in the tavern, they hear gossip, or, you know.
Well, it's like what got me started down the path of redoing the book was that I actually took, most of you haven't because nobody's read this book really, but I start out with a fairly, it's a fairly boring open. I mean, it's basically, it's Nephra sitting at a table.
Right.
And he's basically flipping through the pages of a book. Yawn. I actually start now with an action scene.
Good.
And it's actually the dragon falling out of the sky, and I'm describing the air flying across the air, the wings, and it's flapping the, fluttering the skin on his trailing edge of his wings, and that's a sensation that always brings a smile to his face. He's a dragon. He can't really smile, but you can always see it in his eyes.
Right.
Yada, yada.
Right.
There's the opening of the book right there.
Sure.
And that scene was really engaging because I actually stopped in the middle and actually went back and reread it and went, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's kind of cool. Where'd that come from? So those are the kind of things that keep you moving forward too. And that's the things that since I got that, I found my start.
Right.
Now I'm kind of, I got a fire behind me to actually keep moving with it. Time's just going to be the issue.
Okay, so there are two things that I want to throw out of tools you can use to begin to look at these sorts of things to find more material to flesh your characters out and then flesh the story out. First thing is just what I refer to as areas of inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in everybody's life, you have several areas of inquiry, and I've listed four of them because these are the four fundamental ones.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so you have love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, romance. Are they going to find somebody? And when you think about love, think about their present situation. Think about exes who might come back,
mm-hmm.
or exes that they've lost, or you know, people who've died, that sort of thing that may have an emotional impact. Think about the future, people that they're looking toward.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the never was, you know, the guy who's obsessing, believing he's in a relationship with someone else.
Sure.
You know, and think about the unsuspected. Think about a person who's going along not realizing someone else is in love with him. So that just gives you five little areas to look at just in that one little area. And if you were to set up little tiny scenes or little tiny conflicts or little things to run through in a story dealing with any one of those or any two of those,
mm-hmm.
I mean, pick two and suddenly you've got a love triangle.
Right.
You know?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, here's this widower who's very, very sad, doesn't realize this other person's in love with him. You know, all of a sudden there's a lot of different play that's going on right there, and you can find three or four different scenes that you'll toss in.
Exactly.
So one thing is love. Another one is money.
Oh, yeah. Money's huge.
Okay. Either you got it, you want it, you need it, you owe it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize that you've got it and someone wants to take it from you. Okay. So, exactly. Again, there's a lot of different things that you've got going on there. And money, of course, is, there can be any MacGuffin. You know, you've got the magic sword. You've
right.
got anything that someone
anything
else could
important.
Want to take from
you. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Anything that has value to this world in your book, whatever it is. Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't have to be coins.
Right. Exactly. And if it's got a value to that person, one of the great things you do with the character is you put them in a Lady or the Tiger situation.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to kill, you know, the love of your life if you don't surrender to me the sword of Gondolawara or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Okay, you know, I have no choice, you know, yeah. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Here.
So again,
it builds conflict.
It builds conflict. Okay, the next one we've got is health, just somebody's health. Also, you can look at that as their age.
Mm-hmm.
How mature are they physically? You know, what are they looking at for issues? You know, is this a warrior who's at the end of his life and this is going to be his last gasp,
mm-hmm.
you know, or is this a kid coming of age? You know, all sorts of things on that order. Also, you look at their associates, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this my quest to get the thing to heal so-and-so?
Right. It's one of the discussions we had about one of the failings in Aragorn was that unfortunately Christopher has a really tough time identifying with older because
right.
he was so young
yeah,
when
exactly.
he was writing it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hard to put yourself in the bones of a 60-year-old man
yeah.
and write that way.
Yeah,
so.
what's interesting is that downshifting, going backwards and remembering what it's to be like to be a kid
is a lot easier.
It's a lot easier, yeah, than projecting forward. Unless
right.
you do the research, unless you talk to a lot of people
the sensation of yeah. riding the board with the buggy whip is not relevant at the moment, but it's still you can kind of feel what it's like being a kid.
And then the other area is what I refer to as family, and you can make it family and friends, but you want you're gonna have love-hate relationships within those sorts of things. You're going to be estranged from some people. You won't have seen them for a long time. There may be some people that you don't even know you have a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
One of the my grandfather wrote a book, but it came out in 1937, and I've there were only 1,000 printed, and I've since been buying up old copies just so I and my cousins could have copies. And one of the ones that I got was actually a signed copy. He had autographed it to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed it to my mom and she had no idea who it was. And I took sort of a sidestep because of another entirely different thing. So this is totally fictional, but I said, you know, what would happen if you were cleaning out your grandparents' house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're going through their library and you noticed that someone had inscribed to your grandmother, to my darling wife, you know, a book I hope you will enjoy as much as I did, Love, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
She was only ever married once, and your grandfather's name was Tom. You know, all of a sudden, here you are, you know,
uh-huh.
30, 35 years old,
Mm-hmm.
It's never been mentioned before. You're wondering, what the hell is this? Exactly. So
that's
so
awesome.
You, yeah. So you
and can, you build mystery. You build an intrigue, and that intrigue will carry a lot of weight. And you can flesh out that story however you want.
It really does. And this is the thing is that Orson Scott Card made a comment that stories begin at a point of change in people's lives. Mm-hmm. So you can have somebody who's got the perfect life. And they find that book, and all of a sudden, it's not a perfect life anymore.
Right.
You know, or what do you do when you're 22 years old, and somebody comes up to you, at, you know, where you're working at a Starbucks, and says, "Hey, you know, you're Tom Black, aren't you? Yeah, I am. I'm your brother."
Yeah.
And you know, and you never knew that, you know, your mom had previous kids, or your dad had an affair with somebody,
right.
You know, or that you were really a twin and you were adopted.
And it's easy to do this in science fiction and fantasy,
exactly.
Because you could throw the other element in there where hey, I'm your brother, I'm also one of the Fae.
Right,
or, you
exactly.
Know, something like
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
And it's like, wow.
Yeah, we were changed at birth. You
exactly.
Know? It's like, yeah. So there's any number of things you can do with that. Okay, so those are areas to look at as areas that you can develop. Now, how do you figure out what you're going to do in terms of rolling down the way? And so what I created, and for anybody who's listening, just take out a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper, you're going to draw a triangle. Mm-hmm. But this is how this goes, okay? One point of the triangle is where your character starts at the story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just put a little mark on the paper and write start next to it. Okay, then off at an angle, off over on the other side, let's say that the start dot is over on the left side of the paper,
mm-hmm.
kind of a little bit higher and over on the right, you're going to put another dot. And that dot is labeled goal.
Okay.
This is where that character thinks he wants to get.
Right.
This is where he believes that he will be. This is his dream.
Okay.
Imagine somebody who says, I want to play in the NBA.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So that is that. Okay. And then you draw another dot. Okay. And just generally somewhere below that, the goal dot that you just
sure.
drew. Doesn't really matter where it is on the paper. You just need the representation. And that dot is destination.
And that's where they actually end up.
This is where they actually end up. Okay. And you know, the goal and the destination, you can measure the divergence. I mean, if it's mm-hmm. a, you know, if he wants to be in the NBA and ends up being a set designer for Broadway, off-Broadway shows.
That's a big okay, divergence.
Big divergence. Okay. Yeah.
You might need a bigger piece of paper.
You might need a bigger piece of paper. Right. Exactly. But you draw that triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You draw that triangle and it's in that box,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is going to be a narrow box or a pretty big box, where you're going to ask yourself, what sort of challenges are we going to have to subject this character to that, A, will move him away from where he thinks he wants to go
mm-hmm.
and begin to shape him into the kind of person who will be at that destination.
Right.
Now, they don't have to go to that destination willingly. You could have a story of moral depravity where, you know, the person gets involved with drugs and, you mm-hmm. know, and embezzling and just, you know.
Just
and,
however and, you want to torture your character to get him there. Exactly.
Right. The, you know, their life disintegrates and that's where they are. And there are plenty of Penny Dreadfuls where you can see that sort of morality play
exactly.
Played out. Or you look at them, you know, thinking, well, they want to be something which is shallow and superficial, and you face them with a bunch of challenges, then that makes them something substantial. You also, when you look at destination, have to ask yourself, are they happy here or aren't they happy here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And again, you have to figure out why. And if they aren't happy there, if that's probably not their final destination, you may have other stories. You may look at where they're going to go from there. But you want that character growth triangle. So you kind of ask yourself, you know, what are the challenges? What are the changes in their life? And what's the permanent growth they're going to get mm-hmm. out of this? You know, do they suddenly get serious because they see something?
And character growth is huge. I mean, it really
it is. It is all it is. It is the game.
I've read books where you actually get character devolvement by the time they get to the end. They're actually less of a person they were before.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate stories like that. And I think there's probably an audience out there for it, but I just don't get those.
That's what I refer to as a negative growth arc. And mm-hmm. I've done it the time that I did it the best. I think it's pretty much the only time that I've done it, except with a villain, but with a major character, was in the Dark Glory War.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a character who was the son of a hero,
mm-hmm.
who was not up to being a hero,
mm-hmm.
and he lays hold to a magic sword.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal with the magic sword is whoever wields this sword will win every fight he uses it in except for his last.
Ooh.
Okay? And you watch throughout the story as this character is forced to draw the sword and use it again and again and again. And you watch the responsibility and the knowing and the fear just erode and break him.
Wow.
And that's a negative growth arc.
But it's interesting.
Exactly. And I think
and that's the difference, is that a lot of them that I've read, or the only few that I've read, it's just a devolvement.
It's window dressing.
Exactly.
It's nothing. You know, Tom Clancy in I think it's in Summer of All Fears,
mm-hmm.
has his character Jack Ryan start drinking more and more and more and more. So mm-hmm. you see Jack being a little bit more dependent on alcohol. And so, you know, here's Tom attempting to make Jack descend into being an alcoholic. Okay. That would have been an interesting character journey if,
mm-hmm.
on the other side, he'd had to climb out of the hole he dug himself into.
Or he got something for it. That would have been interesting, too, is that as he fell down into that hole of alcoholism, that some sort of awareness or something, he gained from it that he had to choose at the end. Then that would have been awesome.
You're right. That would have been cool.
Almost a Sherlock Holmes thing, where Holmes, you know, he falls into his drug addiction so deeply and realizes that if he loses the drugs, he loses his ability to be Sherlock Holmes, and he has to make that decision, and then it's that balancing act.
It is that torture.
Yeah.
Whereas with Clancy, what ended up happening is another character comes to him and says, "Hey, Jack, you're drinking too much." Jack says, "Oh, thanks," and stops.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, okay, well
that was easy. Yeah. Wow, 12 steps in 3 seconds.
I wish somebody come to me and goes, "Stackpole, you're fat." Okay, well, I'll stop eating now. Well, I'll exercise more.
Yeah, I should have known that. Yeah. Well, somebody should have told me that years ago. Thanks.
Damn, if I only had a mirror, you know, yeah. but you want to look at these things and then figuring out what goes in there and deflects them from one thing into the other, you can figure out those challenges. Mm-hmm. It's not very hard, okay,
right,
to be able to do that and find 2 or 3, 4 or 5 little challenges, sort of steps, increments, mm-hmm. that will move them along that journey, you know, little milestones that will move along the journey. And the two things that you want to pay attention to, one is when you're doing this, when you figure this out for one character, you do the same process for the other characters in the book,
mm-hmm.
and you look and see where one character's journey is going to conflict or run parallel with another character's journey. And especially where there are conflicts, that gives you some more challenges.
Very cool.
Some more things to play with. The other thing you want to look at, and this is a big problem that a lot of beginning authors have, is that the character that they want to write about, and it's especially true for gamers,
mm-hmm.
The character that they want to write about is their hero who is at the end of the journey. The character they want to write about is already at the destination.
Mm.
Boring stories.
Mm-hmm.
Think about retrofitting your character. Nobody, sure, writing about the hero, you know, you'll want to read those stories. The stories that we want to read is how he got to be the hero.
Wow, that's given me amazing things to think about here, because I'm taking this to the story I'm doing right now, and it's wow. Okay, where's he going? Interesting. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And so, but it's a real simple little set of tools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to be able to figure all of this stuff out, and this is part of doing any book, of just sitting down. I mean, when I sit down to do a book, I have a notebook and I just do pages and pages and pages of this. The current series of the Secrets, by the time this show comes out, I'll have it up on my website, and that's my subscription newsletter. That's $25 for a year for 25 issues.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm devoting this year's issues to, the seventh volume, is to writing the novel. And so this is just some of the sort of stuff that I've got in there, because these are all little tools that you need to do at the beginning Otherwise, you're never going to be able to finish.
Right.
Because you won't have mind. It's sort of like saying, hey, I want to make a set of dishes for my house and not having any clay. You can have the wheel. You can spend your time at the wheel. You don't have the clay, you ain't making dishes.
Right.
You know? And so this is what you want to do. You want to, you know, excavate that clay. You want to get enough butane or enough gas for your oven and those
all
things.
That stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is it.
All righty. Well, throw out that website.
Okay. So it's michaelastackpole.com or stormwolf.com, either one, and you'll be able to see it. You can, there's a little at the top of the header, there's a visit the Stormwolf store. Go there and you'll see the secrets. And,
excellent.
And you can tag that.
And Michael Stackpole said, ain't. It's awesome.
Well, it's from writing a bunch of these books with guys back in the colonial period.
It's great.
That's a story, and I'm sticking to it.
There you go. All righty. We will be back with more next week or next couple weeks.
Next couple of weeks. We're still working on the schedule.
Yeah, we're still working on the schedule. But, yeah, thanks so much. Go to the website, dragonpage.com. Send us some voicemail, please. 602-206-350-7323. Thank you.